May it please the court. My name is Stephen Klenda, Colorado Bar Registration Number 29196, and I represent Gray Fox Investments, LLC. Your Honors, Colorado interprets procedural rules and evidentiary rules to preserve the right to a trial on the merits. In this case, the trial court made two decisions that decisively tipped the balance of the trial in favor of the associations and unreasonably and unnecessarily denied Gray Fox a trial on the merits. Those two decisions are: the trial court did not fully admit the Gray Fox maintenance summary exhibits, and the trial court correspondingly allowed the association to assert fiduciary duty defenses. It did this despite the fact that both were disclosed within a day of each other at the same time, roughly 1 week before trial, despite the fact it's undisputed that the associations, or that rather Gray Fox, had absolutely no prior notice in the trial management order or otherwise of any sort of fiduciary duty issues that would be introduced into the case, and despite the fact that the maintenance summary exhibits are independently admissible on two grounds. One is as a summary of the association's own data, and the other is because their late disclosure was both harmless and substantially justified.
Counsel, what was the role of the stipulation in this case?
The role of stipulation in the case was merely to try to attempt to clarify and eliminate issues that could be resolved that didn't need the court's attention. The parties stipulated that they would allow the late production of documents, financial records, that would relate to particular offsets, unreimbursed expenses. But that agreement to allow late production of particular documents to try to simplify the issues before the court and not bring before the court issues that we could otherwise independently resolve did not waive Gray Fox's right to use already disclosed documents and other information to establish the value of the maintenance services that it provided to the associations.
Well, the stipulation talks about the offsets totaling $111,000 and change, and there are other references to a $111,000 and change. Why weren't you limited by stipulation to that amount when it talks about totaling the offsets totaling $111,000?
For two reasons. One reason is that under Colorado law, if you because the trial management order asserted damages in the amount to be proven at trial, we're not limited by the amount of damages that are specifically set forth in the list of unreimbursed expenses, because the trial management order should be construed liberally to preserve Gray Fox's right to trial. So the fact that we disclose offsets that for which we have documentation, and Mr. Logsdon's affidavit, both in trying to overturn the sanctions order and in amending his answer to interrogatory number 4 shortly before trial, indicated that the list of unreimbursed expenses contained expenses for which the associations had documentation. That doesn't mean that we're prohibited from using existing evidence to assert offsets for which there is no documentation, particularly when we obtained the evidence that allowed us to do that only roughly a month before trial, and that was the QuickBooks records, accounting records for the associations. We could not assert, estimate, otherwise provide evidence for the value of 6 or more years of maintenance services that the associations or the Gray Fox provided to the associations when we didn't have that data. In fact, we couldn't assert offsets based on the association's own estimates of those maintenance services using its own budget because we received that exhibit from the associations only in an association meeting that occurred 1 week before trial.
Had you requested those in discovery before?
With respect to the exhibit that was disclosed at the association's meeting, it wouldn't have mattered because it didn't exist before the association's meeting.
But you're saying there were 6 years of records that you didn't have before. Did you ask for any documents they had? And here's straight up with you, Mr. Kalender. My trouble is, it's like the day before, he was suddenly almost twice, the damages number exceed, or the offset number almost doubled. I mean, you talk about the TMO, the trial management order in the section on itemization of damages listed the very same $111,000 number. And, you know, I think, with respect, that the other side, it was not unreasonable to be thinking, this is the number I'm dealing with. And so I get it. Sometimes they produce something at the last minute, you got an argument, can make an argument, but you also have to do a duty to do discovery. And it's troubling to me that this $80,000 just shows up at the last minute. So that's why I've asked about the discovery issue.
Your Honor, I don't believe the prior counsel conducted discovery in this case. We came in at the last minute, so.
Horrible place to be, I understand.
But Your Honor, the point is that these accounting records, this data, was the association's own data. And under Colorado law and evidentiary rules, they are assumed to be familiar with their own documents and data, and therefore there was no surprise.
Can I ask you about that, Mr. Kalender, because I'm not sure I understood your argument, and if I miss it, forgive me. It sounds to me like your position is, when you say it's their own data, that there are these numbers and there were kind of budgeted numbers versus actuals, and please correct me if I misunderstood this. And I think your position is, well, once you saw that, you do an arithmetic calculation and you got a difference, and that's the number of the missing maintenance numbers.
Is that correct?
All right. Well, how would the other side, so now that I understand that, how would the other side have known that that's, it's not actually using their data. You did a calculation and you have made an assumption that the missing, that difference is the missing maintenance numbers. How do we know you just didn't come in under budget? I mean, why does that get you to a damages number, just that there was a difference between budgeted and actual?
Because the unabated testimony of the association's manager, Michael Wiseman, established that the services that Gray Fox provided to the associations always and everywhere far exceeded the amount of dues that Gray Fox would otherwise have been required to pay. If you look at the record on page 661, for example, Mr. Lawson's testified that the services far exceeded the amount of dues that were owed. If you look at the record on page 1598, Mr. Lawson testified explicitly that it would be far cheaper for Gray Fox to have paid the dues than to have provided 6 years of maintenance and management services for the associations. That testimony is unrebutted, Your Honor. So that's how we get there. We have the guy who was in charge of the association saying not only did would it have been cheaper for the pay dues, but the trial court expressly found that Mr. Logsdon testified that there are at least, if he was to be able to come up with the records from the construction company that had shut down, that had all the time and maintenance and materials records, he would have been able to establish at least $40,000 more in offsets. So I'm in a difficult position, I admit, Your Honor. I have to prove a case without many records. These are the best records that I have. They're the association's records, therefore they couldn't have been surprised by it. And to preserve the right to trial on the merits, Your Honor, the exhibit should have been admitted. How could there be prejudice? The evidence was admitted, just not for the full purpose that Gray Fox offered it. The associations had ample time to verify the accuracy of the data, could have been done in a few keystrokes, as Mr. Comer testified. That's all the rule to admit a summary exhibit requires. But even more than that, they had 3 weeks before they presented their rebuttal case to prepare any sort of defense they wanted to offer. So to find that they were surprised and couldn't have cured that surprise would require a significant leap of faith, Your Honor.
Well, pardon me, Mr. Klenda, on that, but the stipulation that you signed is dated the 29th of September of 2010, and the trial, I believe, began on the 7th of October. And as of the 29th of September, you indicate that there is $111,000 that's been proved up.
and you guys agree that this is where we are right now. I would suggest to you that when you're talking that short a period before trial and you say this is where we are right now, it's reasonable for the other side to be surprised, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. Remember, that stipulation only relates to the disclosure of documents with respect to particular offsets. We received the association's current budget roughly at the same time, I think on the same day we signed that stipulation. So I couldn't, if I wanted to, have put an estimate of the maintenance expenses into the trial management order. I didn't have the data.
Did you call counsel for the other side when you reviewed the document that you just referred to and said, hey, I'm going to be doing this at trial?
I did not. I did not because we had to get the budget that was provided only at the association's meeting on September 30th, the same day we signed the stipulation. And we had to have that reviewed by the accountants. I moved as quickly as I possibly could. And there were 3 weeks between the end of our case and the beginning of the other side's case, Your Honor. That's ample time to preserve the right to trial on the merits in this case. And that's what the court should be looking at, Your Honor. There should be no surprise. It's the association's own data, Your Honor. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Klinda. Mr. Berg.
May it please the court, I'm Charles Berg, appearing on behalf of the associations. To bring to the attention of a rather bookkeeping matter, Your Honor, the supplemental record is actually incomplete. In this case, it was submitted, I think, in June. Both counsel had asked the trial court to determine if Exhibit 151, the email, had been admitted. The court ruled on April 26th of this year that it had been admitted, but unfortunately, that order did not make it in the supplemental record. I discussed it with Mr. Klinda, and I believe we can stipulate that Exhibit 151 was admitted.
I thank you for that, counsel. I think that's fine if you just want to file some sort of stipulation. If we need to do anything administratively to make sure we have it, I think that'll be fine. Thank you.
To give the court just a very short chronology as to what the wording of the TMO said, the TMO was signed by the court on July 16th, 2010. And in part five, it stated that defendant claims offsets against any judgment entered against it in the amount of $111,039. Defendant also requests attorney fees. As the court knows, this was part five of the TMO rules, which state that in part five there should be a computation of any economic damages claimed. The Rule 16 also goes on and says it's possible to ask for an amendment of the TMO, but there has to be a showing that it was not possible to anticipate this change that's being requested. Of course, the TMO closes or controls the subsequent course of the trial.
Can you really claim a surprise or even prejudice if the data came from the information that your client produced to the other side?
Certainly, and let's discuss that. First off, when my clients took over the associations in September of 2008, they received a copy of a compact disc containing the QuickBooks records. And those records were from basically roughly 2001 through that September date of 2008. Now, it would be unfair in this situation for the new directors who during this period had never received financial reports, there were no annual meetings, that were set up by Mr. Logsdon, and I'll refer to that as the Logsdon regime. There were no meetings, financial statements, and so forth. So they received these records blind, so to speak. I think it'd be unfair to say that they are being held to knowledge of what this six-year Logsdon regime had done. But you also have to realize the day before the trial, the defendant submitted basically an claim for an additional $80,000 above the $110,000 that had been specifically stated in the TMO. By the way, the defendant never asked to amend the TMO. Now, the theory that Gray Fox had regarding this amended claim of $80,000 was to take the budget for, and there was only one budget for one association for 1 year, 2003. But their theory was take that budget, subtract what showed up as expenses on this CD, QuickBooks CD. And their theory was the difference, even though it wasn't recorded in the records, that had to be additional value supplied by the defendants. That is their maintenance value theory. This was presented to our side the day before trial.
So your position, Mr. Berg, is that you, even if you knew the numbers, you had no idea about this new theory of damages?
I had no idea about the new theory. And what's important is the numbers are not in the QuickBooks records. These are not expenses that are recorded. The theory is, even though there is no check, no number, it must have been supplied as a service because of the difference between the budget and what was actually spent. Now, that theory falls down when you think about it. Take snow expenses. If the budget, which it does, allows a certain amount of money for snow expense in a particular year, and say $5,000, and only $1,000 is spent by the association, is it to be assumed that there were an additional $4,000 of snow expenses where there's no check? Of course not. The budget is merely a projection. It may not actually occur that those expenses rise to the level of the budget. So,
Can I ask, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Burke. Can I ask, and this budgeted number, is it a budgeted number of expenses or dues? I didn't want to interrupt Mr. Clendon. I wasn't 100% sure.
It's a budgeted number of expenses, and from that, the dues are determined. The dues are determined to be the exact amount of what the budgeted expenses are. Unfortunately, in this case, and during the management of the Logsdon regime, they never budgeted for reserves. That had the effect of boosting the amount that was being provided for management fees. But going back to the budget, not only are these sort of presumed numbers of services not in the actual QuickBooks records, as testified at the trial, those expenses supposedly, and the checks for expenses, were spent by Diamondback Services, which was a subsidiary of Mr. Logsdon and of Gray Fox. So certainly the day before trial, we didn't have any of those records. And as came out of trial, the Diamondback records had been disposed of. So we would have had to determine to go back, it'd been impossible to think through all the possible defenses to this new theory. The other factor is, as I indicated, the QuickBooks records were determined, were set up by Mr. Logsdon's regime in the six-year period. They, Gray Fox, kept, and we would assume, its original CD. It always had that. It created the records. What the associations received in September of 2008 was a backup copy. So, now, when this stipulation was signed, Mr. Glenda indicated that they would like to get a copy of the backup disk, and that was promptly provided by the associations. So. As to the, so the associations would submit that the knowledge of what was in the CDs cannot be imputed to the new association. As to the issue of the fiduciary duty, in that regard, the associations, and here's the way the pleadings went. Associations filed their complaint. The Gray Fox filed its answer. It did not file a counterclaim. It filed as an affirmative defense. It stated it had set-offs. Therefore, it wasn't required for the associations to file a reply to any counterclaim. Nevertheless, the position of the associations regarding this fiduciary duty was that that was a statutory designation in the condominium statute that said that the declarant, while it is in power, has assumes fiduciary duties. So in our trial brief, it was just pointed out that there is this fiduciary duty obligation on Gray Fox, so the court should keep that in mind that as part of their burden in setting forth and proving their set-offs, that they have a statutory fiduciary duty. And as set forth in our brief, what that would mean, if they have the fiduciary duty, they have to show that their obligation, their proof is to show that the transactions were fair and done in good faith. So it's not a counterclaim by the associations. It's not even really an affirmative defense. It's pointing out to Gray Fox and to the court that they have a high burden here regarding the proof of their set-offs. Ironically, in the TMO, which just recited the pleadings of the parties in part one, Gray Fox asserted that the associations had breached their fiduciary duty. So it was hardly new. But once again, it was not a counterclaim by the court, and the trial court in its ruling said so. One final point that was not raised by Mr. Clendon in his oral argument, but it's in the brief, and I'd like to just comment on it. It's the question of this $11,000, and the court basically following an argument that the associations had presented in their summary statement, and as to the summary statements, the trial court asked that both sides submit summary statements within 10 or 15 days after the trial. Both sides did. In our summary statement, we set forth the argument regarding this $11,000 payment that had been made by Gray Fox prior to the claim period asserted by the associations. This payment for asphalt work was paid out in March of 2008. The claim period for the associations began in September of 2008. What the associations pointed out in their summary statement was that in March of 2003, that was when the $11,000 payment was made. In March of 2003, Gray Fox owed $28,000 plus in unpaid assessments. It was the Gray Fox procedure to basically not write checks for assessments. In fact, it paid very few assessments directly, but it had the theory that it would set off its expenses on behalf of the association. It was a position of the associations that find that that $11,000 payment in March of 2003 went to pay off the unpaid assessments in March of 2003. And it was only a part payment. Therefore, that credit, so to speak, of $11,000 was used up. It was no longer available to be added and used as a set off against charges arising after September of 2003.
Can I, just for clarification, yes. Counsel asked, did Mr. Klender or the other side make the argument the statute of limitations that they're making here in their summary statement? In other words, you use the phrase claims period, and I think there's a distinction between the statute of limitations period, and I'm just curious if this argument that's presented to us now was presented below.
Well, in our summary statement, we indicated to the trial court that we were not relying on the statute of limitations to bar this $11,000 payment in March of 2003. The argument was on equitable grounds that it had been used up, as I explained.
All right, so when the court used the phrase claims period, the court was, as best as you can understand without reading the court's mind, was picking up on the argument you made that essentially the apples should meet the apples, that the offset should apply in the same claims period you're making the
exactly.
claims for.
And the trial court, in its order, had also used the summary statement that we had submitted in talking about three various ways of calculating the management fee and so forth.
Before you sit down, Mr. Berg, can I ask you to submit a stipulation? Do you have any? How long would you need to do that? Probably not much time. I would, Mr. Klender.
10 days.
Sure. If 10 days seems a little long to file a stipulation, it was in the record. Can you get us something by the end of the week?
Certainly.
That would be great. Friday, the close of business would be excellent. Just go ahead and file it. The stipulation.
And since you've stipulated to it, or you're about to, let me ask you one quick question. I know your time is written, has expired otherwise. What would you have this court do with Exhibit 151 now, the email?
It is in the record. Exhibit 151 is a copy of the stipulation as part of the record. What is not part of the record is the trial court's ruling that it had admitted Exhibit 151, the email in question.
So it's that ruling that you're stipulating to?
Yes, okay. That it should be part of the ruling.
So we have a record it was admitted?
Yes.
Understood.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Andrew, you've got almost 3.5 minutes.
I'll try to move quickly while addressing any questions that the court has. Your Honor, Mr. Berg's assertion that the associations had the QuickBook records and merely provided a backup copy to the associations is not supported by any testimony in the record. At the record at page 1579 to 80, Mr. Lodgson testified he didn't keep a copy of any records he turned over. The association's accountant at pages 77 and 78 of the record, 77 indicated that he did not have the QuickBook records until shortly before trial, and on page 78 he testified that he was only able to garner information about an additional snow removal with offset because he now had access to the QuickBook records. So the Gray Fox didn't have them. They gave them to the associations. Thereafter, they didn't have them.
Pardon me, Mr. Klender. It is in that context you want us to take a look at paragraph 6 of the stipulation that says the associations have provided to Gray Fox Investments a copy of the QuickBooks backup disk that Gray Fox Investments provided to the associations when Gray Fox Investments ceased to manage the associations.
Yes, Your Honor.
So originally you would agree that Gray Fox originally gave this backup to the associations and that the associations were now giving it back. Would you agree with that? Is
yes.
that what that paragraph means?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Indicating that we lacked access to it after we gave it up.
Okay.
Okay. Your Honors, waiver has to be expressed here. It can't be implied. And waiver even protects, the rule of express waiver even protects foolish gentlemen who are trying to save court time. The association's own interpretation of the trial management order acknowledges that they did not believe that Gray Fox Investments was limited to the offsets that are listed in the unreimbursed expenses exhibit. After the TMO was submitted, the associations continued to pursue a discovery sanction that would have had the exact same effect that they alleged the trial management order already had. What's the point of that? Should the court interpret the trial management order according to the own parties' pre-conflict view of that agreement, of the trial management order? That's what the Colorado Supreme Court says. Not to imply a waiver based on an interpretation that the associations don't even agree with. I'll just end with one final point, Your Honor. The evidence here was admitted. It was admitted. There was ample opportunity to defend against it. There were 3 weeks to defend against it. This court should do what the Colorado Supreme Court has done and interpret the trial management order, which provided notice of our property management expenses, including...
You can finish this. Go finish your sentence. Thank you for your respect for the court.
Including both management and maintenance expenses. I'm sorry, Your Honors, I lost my train of thought.
No problem.
The point is, Your Honors, trial on the merits. We didn't get it. There's adequate explanation for it. The late in that disclosure was substantially justified and harmless. Thank you
very much, Mr. Clendon. We thank you again, Mr. Berg. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. You know, I make it a practice among counsel to acknowledge that, and I appreciate you both. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we don't see it enough. The professionalism and respect you've shown to each other in the court is greatly appreciated, and you know, go out and continue to preach that, because we need to see more of it. So thank you both. You're excused.